What You Missed on the Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lynn. Only on Money FM 89.3.
Are these the dog days of summer? Are Monday blues carrying over to the rest of the week? Or are traders suffering from a post-World Cup hangover? These are among the questions that our next guest has been contemplating today. As the head of trading at OANDA, Stephen Innes is on the front lines of the markets. Stephen, welcome to the Curve. The big political news today is the meeting overnight between U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. The two seem to get along extremely well, better, in fact, than Trump gets along with his European counterparts. Are the markets reacting to the Trump-Putin summit at all?
I think the markets are viewing this with sort of amazement in the sense that, the way that the president is coming across is just way too friendly. But I think what it's opening up is to a level of partisan politics where we're hearing rhetoric from the other side of the the street coming across quite negatively on this. However, as far as the markets reacting, they don't seem to be caring. They're looking at this as having very little market impact and probably just avoid these headlines and move on to the next one.
Well, one thing that definitely is impacting the markets now is the price of oil. The price of a barrel of West Texas crude dropped 5% overnight, sinking below $68. There's been a 9% reversal in crude prices in less than a week. Why are oil prices suddenly tanking?
Yeah, this has been an incredible move, Michael. I think if we look back to last Wednesday, actually, when we saw some shift in the supply side of the equation as Libya was coming back online and then added supply coming back in from Canada that was curbed because of some outages up in the tar sands. What that told me was supply is coming back online, but if you look at the veracity of the move, the breadth of the sell-off and the volumes that were traded last Wednesday, it sort of implied that there was a subtle shift in, well, not subtle, there's an aggressive shift in sentiment. Move forward to this week, we've had two other elements come into play. One is the threat that the Trump could perhaps tap the strategic petroleum reserve. And then there's this increased chatter surrounding possible more Iranian waivers. Which all this suggests is that there's more supply coming online, the market's reacting aggressively, and long positions are completely liquidating as bearish sentiment grows thick.
Well, you mentioned there could be more waivers. Stephen Mnuchin said overnight that the U.S. would consider waivers to Iranian sanctions for countries that require more time to taper down their oil imports. This walks back an earlier administration no-exemptions policy. But it also seems the U.S. will not give any exemptions to Europe. Quite amazing, actually. If we look at oil prices now, given all this volatility, where do you see them headed?
Well, I've been bullish on oil going forward here. I think this all predicates on, I still have a very optimistic view on how the trade war is going to play out. I don't think we're actually going to get to this $200 billion threat. I think we're going to see cooler heads prevail. We've got 6 weeks to iron sentiment out right now. I think the key here is provided that the U.S. and China can stay at the negotiating table, I think we're going to have some sort of resolve here. After all, if we look at it on the surface right now, the U.S. is coming across aggressive with $200 billion. China can't retaliate to that size because they're only importing $130 billion from the U.S. So something has to give either on the currency front or they have to become more aggressive on smaller amount of goods. Now, I think both those options, they don't want to go down that road. So I think there's going to be some compromise at some stage over the next few weeks.
On the price of oil, though, where do you see it headed? I spoke to some people just a week ago who thought it would hit $80 a barrel. Right now, Brent crude at 72, WTI, the West Texas, at 68. Do you see it staying in these levels, dropping, or is 80 still in the realm of possibility?
Well, you know, it's an outside chance we can get back up there, especially if the trade war de-escalates. However, I think it's going to need a little bit of help from the supply side of the equation. It looks right now, as we're coming up to midterm elections, that the U.S., and particularly Donald Trump, is really putting forth a strong argument here to push oil prices lower. I think he's picked up an olive branch of support from Russia, as goodwill gesture for the, for that meeting. And I also think he's got Saudi Arabia in his back pocket right now. So I think both those two elements are willing to supply. But I think over up until we pass the midterms, I think the top side on oil could be quite limited. And $80 is possible, but I think it's a bit far-reaching given that scenario that I just referred to.
So as consumers, should we be breathing a sigh of relief that oil prices are not going up?
Well, it's still $70 a barrel. I don't know how much of a sigh of relief you want to breathe on that. They're still quite expensive relative for it to $40 not so long ago. But yeah, I think the prospect was looking quite aggressively higher not so long ago. So yeah, I think the end consumer is probably a little bit happier that he's not going to have to pay so much for his gas at the pump over the next 6 months or so.
Let's turn the conversation now to China. Yesterday, Beijing reported GDP growth for the whole country of 6.7%. That's in line with expectations, but the slowest growth in 2 years. Today, we see the Hong Kong and Shanghai markets slumping, and the Chinese renminbi has weakened to its lowest level in 2 weeks. What's going on? I know the renminbi was one of your key areas of focus today.
Yeah, it's constantly one of the key areas of focus. I think that currency and that market itself is at the epicenter of the entire trade, where I think reading between the lines, we're looking at a divergence in monetary policy between China and the Feds, which normally go tick for tick. That tells me that China's seeing some underlying issues. Now, the market seemed to shrug off the lower GDP print yesterday, okay? But, you know, that's the optimist at that. But the pessimist like myself probably adhere more to the Paul Krugman philosophy when it comes to economic data, as best viewed as a peculiar, boring genre of science fiction. But Chinese data is even more fictional than most. So if you adhere to that policy and you have the pessimistic attitude that I have towards reading deeper into the Chinese economic data, I think the issues are far more deeply rooted than what appears on the surface. I think the deleveraging that's been going on in China for the last year is a negative impact. And even these subtle tariffs that are getting implemented, $40 billion, this is negative for the Chinese economy. And I think there's going to be one option here. And I think the Chinese monetary authorities are going to have to drop interest rates. However, what's going on in the markets right now is that back and forth indecision of what the markets are going to do, or sorry, what the PBOC is going to do. When there's indecision, when there's uncertainty, markets tend to sell off, and I think that's what we're going through right now in China.
All right. Wow. So you do see a continued divergence then between the Fed interest rates, U.S. interest rates, and Chinese interest rates. You do expect the PBOC to lower further.
Well, I expect them to at least move the RRR, okay, more comfortable, lower. And I think they're also going to ease monetary policy if we start to see more weakening in the economic data. Whereas on the Federal Reserve Board side, you know, I'm looking outside of trade war escalation here. The Federal Reserve Board should feel comfortable, and they've positioned themselves quite comfortably to move on a gradual pace towards interest rate normalization. So yeah, I see a possible divergence opening here, with the yuan being the weaker link of the two currencies.
The big story in the U.S. overnight, to shift gears, was Netflix. The share price just sputtered after the company reported lower than expected subscription numbers. And now in pre-market trade, shares of Netflix are down some 14%. It had, I think, more than doubled, though, in the previous year. Would you say that investors have simply bid it and other tech stocks up too much?
Well, I think this has just been such a success story in the fangs that investors just continue to buy into that storyline of growth and subscriber growth. But obviously, there was a reality check of sorts that came in. Now, obviously, you can write that down to, you know, perhaps not having a solid lineup and what have you. But that was quite a thud heard on Wall Street overnight. When one of your high flyer stocks drops 14%, I think the market definitely take notice. And I'm actually a little bit surprised that the market didn't really sell off more than it did. Are investors complacent? Are investors taking my attitude that they think trade wars not going to fully escalate? Well, I think this is what's happening right now. They're really looking at corporate earnings. They're seeing corporate earnings perhaps picking up another 20% by year end, and they continue to buy on dips. And I think this is going to be the going to be the flavor as we go forward this month anyway.
Well, you mentioned the FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. Google, of course, now Alphabet. Buy on dips. Does that mean that you think these stocks still have more range to go?
I think they do. I think over time these are going to be, continue to be the leaders. I think the high tech, without any argument really that high tech sector is going to continue to outperform through the years. I think, however, one thing that I've really noticed is that even in the escalation of trade wars, they do rattle a little bit. They do come off a little bit. But they come charging back the next day, and they really, really are the undisputed heavyweight champions of the equity world, no hands down. They appear impervious to risk off, and they appear totally impervious to trade wars. So I think these are going to continue to be good performers going through 2018.
Well, I'm putting you through all the motions with a whole range of markets, and I'm going to jump to yet another one, which is gold. You wrote this morning that bear sentiment continues to engulf the precious metal space and that gold broke a fundamental support level overnight. Tell us more.
Well, I think bearish sentiment continues to engulf that space. I think it's more dollar-driven than anything else. But if we also couple the fact that it actually has very little safe haven demand, that's a bit surprising when you would actually think the trade war is escalating. You would think investors would be looking for hedges. But here's the catch. Even though trade wars are escalating, equity markets are still moving higher. So we're not seeing that natural hedge out of equity markets into gold. Very little demand in gold ETFs. And even on the street here, when you actually go to the jewelers, they're actually trying to give the gold away. So that tells me there's no real demand for physical, at the street level. And talking to friends around the area around the region that actually trade gold, they are completely bullish because they expect the U.S. dollar to actually pick up more strength, especially as the trade war, continues to escalate. Mind you, I don't have that outlook, but that's the way the market's going, and that's the way you have to play the market, because the prices in the markets are always correct, and you have to adapt the market sentiment, not the other way around.
So where do you see the U.S. dollar going now?
Well, I mean, it becomes one of these idiosyncratic stories. Like, whereas, escalating trade war could play out quite positively for the U.S. dollar against emerging market stocks, in particular over in Asia, you would tend to think they would bear the brunt of a full-out escalation with China. However, I also boil it down into a really simple matrix, okay, when I'm making a currency decision, especially in these somewhat directionless markets. I look at central banks that are raising rates, and I look at central banks that aren't raising rates. In my view, the U.S. dollar, the U.S. are raising interest rates. That's positive for the U.S. It appears that the euro, Japan, and Aussie continue to sit on the fence, and this would be negative for these currencies. Under that scenario, I see the euro improving below 116. I see the U.S. dollar improving below 116 on the euro. I see the Aussie trading down around 72. And obviously on the Japanese yen, I think fair value, given the interest rate differentials, would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 115.50 to 116 level.
Okay, so you see the dollar going stronger. One last question for you, Stephen. The World Cup is over. Market turnover here in Singapore is still quite light. If you look at the indices in the U.S., they're more or less flat. What's it going to take to bring investors back into the market?
Well, I think we really are getting into the dog days of summer. A lot of traders have really deferred their holidays. So I think we're getting into August, and just about everybody I know is going to be taking off two or even 3 weeks in August, trying to make up for the holidays that they've lost. I think really, however, getting back to the question here, I think really what's going to convince investors to come back with a vengeance is going to be a full-out de-escalation of trade war. This continues to be the main narrative in the market. Until that de-escalates, I think caution reigns.
Okay, caution reigns, and let's hope that those trade tensions do dissipate. We've been speaking with Stephen Ennis. He's the head of trading at Oanda. Stephen, thank you very much.